Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to tonight's version of the Molloy program. Still have the hideous allergy cough, so no video streaming tonight. We'll have a backup on Monday. I could turn it on, but I just feel like hammered hell, and my nose is running, and you know. So, how about the governor of Arizona, huh? How about that Jan Brewer? Now, I'm not sure. I'm not real sure here, but I would be willing to bet you, if asked, Jan Brewer would say she's a Christian. You think? Eh? She might be Jewish. But either Christian or Jew, she's kind of stuck now. She has violated God's commandments in signing this hideous immigration, quote, bill. I read from the book, Leviticus 19, 33 and 34. And if a stranger sojourn with thee in your land, ye shall not vex him. But the stranger that dwelleth with you shall be unto you as one born among you. And thou shalt love him as thyself. For ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Now that's directly out of the mouth of the Christian God. I mean, right out of his larynx. And to make sure you know that, you see, he ends it by saying, I am the Lord your God. Exodus 22:21. Thou shalt neither vex a stranger nor oppress him. Exodus 23:9. Also, thou shalt not oppress a stranger, for ye know the heart of a stranger, seeing ye were strangers. Deuteronomy 10:19. Love ye therefore the stranger, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. So in four or five different places in the Old Testament where God is speaking directly to the Israelites, and the Christians have co-opted everything that God said to the Israelites and said, this is inerrant. This is the word of God. This cannot be tampered with. Nah, do not change a comma, period, or semicolon. This is the Lord your God speaking. Well, Jan, Misra's governor, guess what? Your ass and the rest of you is in a heap of trouble tonight. I'm here to tell you. You have, God repeated this four, five, six times just to make sure that the point was made. Do not vex a stranger. Treat him as if he were native born. Treat him as if he were one of yours. And what are you crazy bastards in Arizona doing? What is wrong with you? Ah! The bill that this God-hating Governor Jan Brewer signed. Wouldn't it be funny if she were an atheist? Then I'd be celebrating her. I'd say, hey, go, Jan. Forget what the Bible says, the B-I-B-L-E. It's all head cheese to me. The bill that Governor Brewer signed makes it a misdemeanor to lack proper paperwork in Arizona. Oh, my goodness. Proper paperwork. Last time I was in Phoenix, I think I had a driver's license. Is that proper? But you can get a driver's license in the bottom of a Cracker Jack box now. If you don't have proper paperwork and you are stopped and asked, I want to see your papers, and you don't have proper, what is proper paperwork? That's a misdemeanor. The law also requires police officers to attempt to determine a person's immigration status if the cop forms what the law calls a reasonable suspicion that someone is undocumented. Now, what would be a reasonable suspicion? I, a white male of a certain age, will never be stopped in Phoenix. And trust me, my age has nothing to do with it. It's the white skin. I will never be stopped. I could be from, I don't know, pick a country, Ukraine, Poland, any country here with no papers, illegal, looking for a job in Phoenix or some other hellhole in Arizona, looking to find, I don't know, I want to cut your lawn. Wait, they don't have lawns out there. All right, I want to move your stones around. Careful there. I want to trim your cacti. Whatever it is that, you know, yard boys do out there, I want to do it. Well, I could be standing in front of a Walmart with a lawnmower and a pair of hedge clippers, and the police would never come up to me because I, thank you, Jesus, am white. But let's supposing Jose Enrique Gonzalez y Santa Maria is standing in front of Walmart with or Home Depot with lawnmower and pair of hedge trimmers. How long do you think it's going to take under this new law for some bully-ass white cop to pull up and say, yo, Beaner, come here, show me your papers. Now, is that racial profiling? Meantime, I'm standing right there, too, but he's not going to call me a Beaner. He might call me a Dago or a WAP. Maybe not, because I don't look that Italian. But he's not going to ask for my papers. And why is that? Well, I don't have dark hair or olive skin or dark, well, kind of olive skin or dark eyes. I've got blue eyes. So he's not going to ask me anything. Is that racial profiling? Is that against the law? The Constitution declares that only the federal government has the power and the authority to make laws regarding immigrations. Or immigration only, whether it's illegal or illegal, doesn't make any difference, only. So obviously this is not going to stand up. What it will do, what this bill will be challenged in court and it will be thrown out. It'll be appealed to go to appeals court. It'll be thrown out. It'll be appealed to go to the Supreme Court. And even these right-wing bastards on the U.S. Supreme Court will have to throw it out. The problem is this is going to take some time. And in that time period, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be severely harassed and there's going to be blood. There will be blood. Over this. There will be blood. You know it as well as I do. I'm not sure whose blood will flow, but there will be blood. The extreme right-wing crazy people, white crazy people in Arizona, you know, the Glenn Beck listeners, will see this as a license for them to go burn the homes of people that they think are illegal immigrants. Go burn their trailers or their apartments or their condos or their houses. This is all it takes. The laws that were passed in Germany, in Hitlerian Germany, about the Jews, unleashed a kind of bigotry that had been pent up that resulted in 6 million dead. What's going to happen in Arizona? Are you people in Arizona going to stand for this? Of course you are. Of course you are. It's not your problem. Leading police chiefs and sheriffs have expressed outrage at the bill's signing, say it will cause immigrants to avoid reporting crimes. It'll divert officers' attention from going after violent offenders. Oh, but the conservative teabag freaks that passed this, they don't care. And this is the same state, isn't it, that has before it a bill to demand, or has that been passed into law, too, demand to see a birth certificate? For any presidential candidate, you know, we have a freak down here in Georgia who's introduced the same thing into the Georgia General Assembly. Huh? Yeah. Astonishing. Astonishing. All you have to do is look like a Mexican. Now, that could be a Guatemalan, Honduran, Salvadoran, Costa Rican, Nicaraguan, Panamanian, Chilean, Bolivian. You see, the white people in Arizona and across the rest of the country, they can't tell the difference. You know, they all look the same. Thank you.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. A couple of emails on this. According to Kate, it's also ironic that Jan Brewer isn't even the elected governor. She stepped up from the Secretary of State's office when Napolitano went to Homeland Security. This is truly most scary, Kate writes. Oh, by the way, there are green lawns in Phoenix. They're called golf courses. Yeah. From RD, Mike, what are the Native Americans in Arizona thinking about this insanity? Yeah, you know, I mean, if you are an indigenous person, if your family goes back, you know, 2,000 years in what is now called Arizona, and here all these Europeans have moved in, and now they've declared that Latinos or Hispanics or I don't know, whatever you want to, however you want to identify them, they're no longer welcome. And I know I'm going to get emails from people that say, that's not what the issue is, Mike. The issue is illegal. Illegal aliens. Uh-huh. Well, the Bible says it doesn't make a distinction between legal and illegal. I mean, what? Oh, well, I guess I just don't understand the problem in Arizona, do I? Peter in Vermont. Mike, apparently the Cactus League, baseball, is quite popular in Arizona. Also, a lot of Major League Baseball teams have spring training facilities there. How many millionaire athletes who may or may not resemble the dreaded illegal alien want to get pulled over and hassled by the police? Might have an economic impact there. Peter in Vermont. Yeah, what, isn't that going to be funny? Be spring training and some Latino ball player. You know there's going to be trouble. Spilk writes in that Jan Brewer is a Lutheran. And the dog whistle that she just blew to the crazy Minutemen is going to result in the injury and death of a lot of Latinos. The Archbishop of Los Angeles, for what it's worth, you know, credit where credit's due, after all. According to L.A. Times and Irish Central, a couple other places here, Spilk has sent me. The Archbishop of Los Angeles, Cardinal Roger Mahoney, has come out swinging against Arizona's illegal immigration measure, calling it something the Nazis would have been proud of. He blasted the bill as, quote, the country's most retrogressive, mean-spirited, and useless anti-immigration law. He went on to say, quote, American people are fair-minded and respectful. I can't imagine Arizonans now reverting to German Nazi and Russian communist techniques whereby people are required to turn one another into the authorities on any suspicion of documentation, end quote. I don't get this. I really don't, except to consider it in the greater context of the illness, the sickness that is destroying the United States of America. And it is a sickness. It's manifesting in several different ways. This is just one manifestation of this critical and possibly fatal illness that is eating this country alive. Just eating us alive. So here's another symptom, right? Governor Jan Brewer. And I think the guy who sponsored the bill, some legislator from Arizona said, this is not racial profiling. You can tell who these people are by their shoes. Because illegal immigrants apparently wear a certain coded shoe. Is that right? I didn't know that. We have an awful lot of non-white people, African-American people live in the metro Atlanta area, all over North Georgia. And I haven't noticed their shoes. I know a lot of these people, when they first show up here, have shoes that are falling apart, have holes in them, and after not too many weeks from mowing lawns and putting roofs on and digging ditches and doing the kind of work that white people don't want to do here, they have a brand new pair of sneakers or even regular shoes. It's amazing. They get shoes. And I'm trying to figure out, what is an illegal immigrant shoe? Son of a gun. We have a mall not far from here that is all in Spanish, and it's got all these little shops in it, and it's designed for the Latino population in a certain part of Atlanta. And I'm going to have to go over there tomorrow. I'm going to walk in one of those stores and say, show me some of them Mexican or immigrant shoes. I want to see some illegal immigrant shoes, because the guy out there in Arizona says, well, that's how you tell who they are. You look at their shoes. Oh, okay. Well, that's easy.
When you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange.
C-SPAN, so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malone.
It's 25 before the hour. BC writes, I have family in Arizona, but I'll be damned if I'd travel with my little Chiquita into that hellhole. There would be a major confrontation. We're talking blood on the highway. Now they're really starting to head home. Yeah. Jared in Bakersfield, California writes, Mike, these anti-immigration laws such as those just passed in Arizona are just the beginning of the states' rights racist sentiment currently rippling across the country. Didn't we already go through this in the 1860s? What if the higher courts don't strike down the Arizona law? This is all because of a black man is in charge, Jared. They have no choice if they are strict constitutionalists, because the whole idea of immigration and who controls the terms of immigration is a federal issue. This is probably just to get people elected in Arizona, but it's going to get people killed too. You know it as well as I do. God, I hate this. Last night, I read the first part of a piece that Bob Alexander, our Moment with Bob person, sent to me. And it was about his experience in quitting smoking. And I said, anyone who is a smoker, in my entire life's experience I've ever met, I'm talking about an adult, 14 and 15 and 16, 17-year-olds who start smoking, don't consider quitting, because according to them, they can quit at any time. And besides, they're immortal. They'll never get a disease. And if they do get a disease, they'll take a pill and it will go away. But I'm talking about rational adults, not that teenagers are irrational. You know what I'm saying? Rational adults who are smokers. I've never met one who didn't want to quit, but who had tried many times. Or the favorite line that I used to use all the time. Yeah, I know, it's going to kill me. I'm going to quit soon. Or, I'm in the process of quitting. Or, yeah, I've got to quit. You're right, absolutely right. Yeah, I know. So it's amazing what a powerful addiction can do to you. And I don't think there's anything more powerful in terms of addiction than nicotine. Here's part two. Hey, Mike, a quick recap. Quitting smoking was the hardest thing I've ever consistently failed at until I discovered e-cigarettes. The transition from smoking to using an e-cig was effortless. From a health point of view, the benefits of switching are essentially the same as quitting. And I think that's remarkable. To be able to reap the rewards without having to endure the insanity that goes along with quitting is a couple of notches past astounding and just shy of miraculous. So where can a wannabe ex-smoker buy one? You can find overpriced e-cigs at kiosks in mega malls or at your local smoke shop. In the real world, you can easily spend 2 to 3 times what you would on the internets. Beware of scams, where the company gives you a free e-cig, but automatically whacks your credit card $70 a month forever. After clicking around in the Google, I happened upon some great unsolicited reviews of SigEasy.com, where the starter kit with shipping comes to $45.90. The other company I've done business with is Vapor4Life.com. They carry the same models of e-cig in a slightly wider variety of e-liquid flavors and various nicotine strengths. Both companies provide great customer service, quick delivery, and the American Lung Association, anti-smoking groups, some state governments, and the FDA all want to shut them down. Here's where it gets interesting. Some anti-smoking people have a strange, puritanical, Calvinistic, anti-smoker attitude that I find just plain weird. The criticism I've received since taking up the e-cig from some of these people doesn't make sense. When I tried the nicotine gum and the patch, there was cheerleading, but using the e-cig brought disapproval. You know why? I'm not suffering. Because I was stupid enough to take up such a vile, loathsome habit, quitting shouldn't be easy. There ought to be punishment involved. That'll teach me. Some groups say the e-cig should be banned because of the stress and confusion caused when the poor, innocent public thinks someone might be smoking. Well, somebody quick call a ambulance for these people so they can be sedated before they find out that SpongeBob SquarePants isn't a real person. The name of the game here is harm reduction. My objective wasn't to achieve an absolutely pure lifestyle. I wasn't trying to get into heaven. I just wanted to quit smoking. Sure, I'm still breathing in nicotine vapor, but I'm not inhaling or exhaling tar-filled smoke consisting of over 4,000 chemical compounds, at least 69 of which are known to cause cancer. Nicotine without the smoke can still raise your blood pressure, about the same as a cup of coffee, big deal. A spokesman for the American Lung Association has declared that electronic cigarettes are designed as a ploy to encourage people to smoke regular cigarettes. That's insane. You shouldn't have to rebut that kind of lunacy, but it has to be done. That's just a sample of misinformation put out about e-cigs. Another goofy argument is the different e-liquid flavors will entice children to get hooked on e-cigs. That's right. Kids will see the chocolate mint flavor on a website somewhere, sneak out dad's credit card, and order an e-cig. I'm sure that happens all the time in the alternate universe where kids somehow haven't figured out it's easier to steal cigarettes from their parents. Since 2008, the FDA has been trying to prevent e-cigs from entering the country. Shipments have been seized, and e-cig vendors have gone out of business. In 2009, the FDA warned that e-cigs were harmful. Their analysis of the made-in-China products found carcinogens and toxic chemicals. Well, that sounds scary, doesn't it? The FDA condemned e-cigs on the basis that their lab detected carcinogens, tobacco-specific nitrosamines, in the cartridges of e-cig manufacturers. The FDA held a press conference in which it attempted to scare electronic cigarette users into discontinuing e-cigarette use. Anti-smoking groups, including the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids and American Lung Association, called for a ban on e-cigs due to this carcinogen scare. Like a friend of mine says, quote, though I was born at night, it wasn't last night. I think it's wise to be somewhat skeptical of the government agency that accepted fudged and falsified data and gave us all Nutrisweet. Just Google the side effects of aspartame sometime when you're looking for late-night scary ghost story reading. The FDA and the anti-smoking groups failed to mention that when extracting nicotine from tobacco, some tobacco-specific nitrosamines come along for the ride. The level of these nitrosamines present in electronic cigarettes is at the trace level, measured in parts per trillion, and are comparable to the levels found in the nicotine gum and patch, which are FDA approved. I wonder why the FDA would lie by omission by leaving that out. Maybe it has something to do with money? 10 years ago, the combined sales of the nicotine patch and gum was $570 million. I haven't been able to determine currently how much drug maker GlaxoSmithKline makes from Nicorette, but they're spending $30 million this year on advertising their gum. Big Tobacco rakes in $300 billion a year in sales. There are approximately 47 million smokers in the U.S. who buy 30 billion packs of cigarettes each year. Obviously, e-cigs have the potential to carve out big slices from the big tobacco and pharma profit pie. But who are the interested parties who could potentially have their income streams reduced if e-cigs really took off? In my state, Washington, a smoker pays a $3 sin tax on a pack of cigarettes. This cigarette tax varies from state to state, but the loss of that kind of revenue during these economic hard times might be the motivating factor to pass legislation banning the sale of e-cigs. Four states are currently working to pass such a ban. I thought I had come to the end of the follow the money road until I read a quote from an R.J. Reynolds spokesman buried in a BBC News article regarding the economics of tobacco. Quote, "The U.S. government makes seven times more money from the sale of a pack of cigarettes than the cigarette maker does." End quote. Previously, I thought that outside corporate pressure was behind the FDA's misinformation campaign to ban e-cigs. With $300 billion a year behind you, you can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel with your bare hands, or make the FDA jump through hoops like a circus dog. But the government is also a player with billions at stake. It's equally valid to conjecture that maybe this time internal pressure is at work. Or maybe it's like the ending of Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express. All the suspects did it. I don't know when I got my e-cig in the mail, or I didn't know when I got my e-cig in the mail, that I'd end up following a story like pulling the thread on a cheap sweater. I was just happy to get off cigarettes. Now I know there are hundreds of billions of dollars in play, and the odds aren't in the smoker's favor. Finale when we come back. Stay with us.
Show. Talk radio matters here.
It is 10 before the hour. Back to the finale here of Bob's Cigarettus Opus. I didn't know when I got my e-cig in the mail that I'd end up following a story like pulling the thread on a cheap sweater. I was just happy to get off cigarettes. Now I know there are hundreds of billions of dollars in play, and the odds aren't in the smoker's favor. And in a year or two, e-cigs will probably be banned for the aforementioned billions of reasons. Almost 500,000 people die every year in the U.S. from smoking cigarettes. Too bad for them. This is just another case of profits over people. But I still exhort everyone who smokes cigarettes to try an e-cigarette. I think they'll find that it is possible to quit smoking without going nuts. And later they might want to pick up some extra batteries and empty cartridges. Anyone can easily obtain everything needed to make their own e-liquid. So when e-cigs are banned, well, as Frank from Siggy's, he says, happy vaping. Regards, Bob. P.S. There are many more aspects of the story I couldn't fit in here, but if you click on over to superbeans.com/quitting, there's a lot of information. superbeans.com/quitting. This really, from Bob Alexander, this is really fascinating stuff. I wish this would have been available to me a long time ago. Like I said, I'm in that 7% who on the 50th, or was it 60th, attempt to stop smoking was able to do it with Nicorette gum and patches. So if you are a cigarette smoker, just do it, just for the sheer hell of it. Nobody's going to know if you check out what he's got on his website, superbeans.com/quitting. No one will ever know. This is Bob providing a, if not a public service, an effort to enlighten. I have a couple of old magazine ads that I framed that I have on the wall in the studio. One of them is Ronald Reagan. It's from Christmas 1949 or something. It's a magazine ad, and he has got a carton of Chesterfield cigarettes in his hand and one in his mouth. Or no, a carton under his arm and one in his hand. And he's talking about how he's giving Chesterfield cigarettes to all of his good friends. And there's another one from, I guess, from 43 or 44, another magazine ad. A soldier, an army dude with a cigarette in his mouth, and he's exhorting the people reading the ad to remember the boys overseas and send them a carton or two. Or six, or, you know, whatever you can remember to send to the boys overseas, whatever. So check it out, just for the hell of it. Just for the hell of it, check it out. At the bottom of the next hour, we are going to do da-da! Podcast trivia, where you can win a one-year subscription to downloads of The Molloy Show. Kathy and I were talking today. It's been 4 or 5 weeks since we've done this, because it's been 4 or 5 Fridays in a row, hasn't it, that we have not been? How many? Three? It's been three that we've not been here. So, bottom of the next hour, podcast trivia. And the questions this week were submitted, and we thank Tara. Tara sent these to us of RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. Oh, she didn't know. Not the questions. I'm sorry. She provided the free subscriptions. Tara did, right? Tonight's session of podcast political trivia is sponsored by Tara of RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. So check out our site, and thanks, Tara, for donating this and other podcast subscriptions for our contest. And if you'd like to donate a podcast for the contest, go to MikeMolloy.com. It supports the show, and it gives a needy truth seeker access to the premium content. So thank you. Thanks again to Tara of RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. Check out her site. Another email. This is from Juan Guerra. Mike, I was born here. The subject line says, I'm dark and scared. Mike, I was born here. My father came from Mexico in 56. I am dark, and my 21-year-old son is even darker. I have no accent. I guess I will be a target. Some want an identity card. The Germans had identity symbols. Well, I have to wear an M within a circle? Juan Guerra. That's how it starts, Juan. That's how it starts, right? Man. Jerry in Minneapolis writes, subject line, so it begins. Down in Arizona, one has to carry papers proving that one was born here or legally here. I wonder how long it will take for the Nazification of the rest of the nation. Jerry in Minneapolis. This is from Willard, who writes, Michael, what you are saying now is crazy. The Constitution has nothing at all to do with foreign citizenry, but it has to do with domestics of their constitutionalisms. Foreigners in and the Cray Bible is not relevant to this. I'm sorry. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Let me add just a postscript to what Bob wrote and what I share with you over the past two nights. He's not involved in this company or any company that makes or distributes or sells or solicits e-cigarettes. What happened was Bob, like a lot of us, I put myself in the same group. Maybe you're there too if you're a smoker. You know you want to quit, especially if you're like 50 or something. You're 55 and you're thinking, oh my God, oh. I've been smoking for 35 years, 40 years. And, you know, come on, it's time. Time to quit. And you just don't want to do it. That's the bottom line. I mean, that was the bottom line with me for years. I used to wake up in the morning and hate the fact that cigarettes would kill me. Because I loved them. I loved them. I loved them. So all he's talking about, Bob discovered, you know, he, like a lot of us, he tried all kinds of different ways to quit. And I don't know, about 6-7 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, whatever, we were talking. And he said, yeah, I'm doing the gum. He didn't sound very happy about it. And, you know, I do what I'm not an evangelical ex-smoker at all, you know. You carve out your own coffin as you go through life. Everybody designs their own coffin. We know that. And so I just leave that alone. But I said, oh, yeah, gum. Well, good luck. And then I found out that it didn't work. And he tried this e-cig thing. So that's where all that came from. This is not a Bob Alexander commercial announcement at all. So check it out. Go to his website. And just for the hell of it, I mean, just what do you got to lose? Bob Alexander says it's good. And for someone who smoked, what did he say he smoked for how many years? 44 years? Superbeans.com/quitting. That's right, quitting. Superbeans.com/quitting. And now I'll leave you alone. Let me see what else we've got tonight. A lot of stuff. Lawrence in Spokane wrote a letter to the editor. Actually, it was Lawrence Schuchart. It's a letter to the editor in the Spokesman Review, which fairly obviously is a newspaper in Spokane. Somebody else sent me this. And this is a letter to the editor of the newspaper, Spokesman Review, and it says, under the heading, "The Party's Over." The Democratic Party has liberal, moderate, and conservatives as members of their party, and they seldom agree on many issues. That's why it seems so little gets done. But when they finally agree, it's usually a middle-of-the-road compromise. The Republican Party has chased away most of the liberal and moderate members of their party because they do not pass the litmus tests that they have created to be a Republican, leaving only the fringe members of the conservative movement in its ranks. So how do they enlarge their membership roles? They are trying to woo those who consider themselves to be part of the Tea Party movement. Many in the political world would consider those who are part of the Tea Party movement so far right that they have not only fallen off the right field baseball fence, but are not even in the ball game. Which makes us beg the question, do we really need the Republican Party? It was in the Spokesman Review in Spokane. You know, we do these emails on Friday. Marilyn in Portland. Dear Mike, the Sarah Palin hacker who could get a sentence of 50 years, let's consider Sarah Palin's son who vandalized school buses, cut the brakes, and did other things. He was given the option of jail or Iraq. Well, actually, the army. Sarah has consistently urged him or used him as a political prop, and he will come home a hero. Please compare the two. Sarah complains the hacker impacted her campaign in a negative way. Thanks, Marilyn in Portland. Yeah, I was up here in Tennessee, I think, today, a trial. A young kid, son of a Democratic member of the Tennessee legislature, who either did this because he was manipulated by Acorn and the communists in the Obama basement of the Obama White House, and they grabbed this kid and said, do this, and he did it. Or, if you don't necessarily buy that, or he did it for the same reason that a dog always sits down, licks himself every 10 feet, because he could, or to see if he could. But the kid is facing 50 years in prison. And Sarah was there today. Oh, my goodness. Betty Boop. There she was at the courthouse. Betty Boop. Yeah. Hello. Hi, everybody. Oh, my kids were getting death threats. All kinds of things. Ooh, I don't understand this boy. Now take my son. Never mind. And here in Georgia, here in Hellville, here in the buckle of the Bible Belt, you know, it's such a pretty state. It's just gorgeous here, especially this time of year. And we have crazy people here in our General Assembly. The Georgia House and the Georgia Senate and the governor's office. Crazy people. Absolute banjo-plucking crazy. They really are. So Republican legislators here have decided to follow Arizona's lead, and a law is being proposed here that would force presidential candidates to prove their citizenship before being registered to run on the ballot in Georgia, including the sitting president. But in a what the rest of the world would consider a strange twist, but here in Georgia we just yawn. In a strange twist, State Representative Mark Hatfield, the lead sponsor of the bill, says he's not a believer in the birther theory, even though he believes, contrary to tons of available evidence, that the public has never been provided with proper documentation of the president's place of birth. Isn't this madness? How do people who consider themselves to be coherent enough to go to the bathroom by themselves, brush their teeth by themselves, eat a meal, do some kind of job or work, maybe even work in an office, maybe even wear a coat and tie, maybe even be a legislator. How do people who can function on that, yes, I realize it's a minimal level, but how can people who do that insist that there's been no proof that Barack Obama's an American citizen? God, you people are bonkers. You're mad. You're insane. And I have to live with you. Under Mark Hatfield, under his legislation, each presidential candidate running in Georgia would have to file an affidavit swearing that he's a natural-born citizen of the United States. Hatfield said, quote, in view of all the uncertainty and all the disagreement about any proof of citizenship of the current president, I believe that no citizen should ever have any doubts about the citizenship of the highest elected official of the land. I don't think the American people have been given any adequate documentation of the president's citizenship, end quote, end quote, end quote. Oh, you poor, dumb cracker. Johnny wants a woman, Johnny wants to think of a joke. Johnny's in America. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't.
Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. And coming up after the next break, podcast trivia, where you can win a free one-year subscription to the Malloy Program. Podcast downloads, commercial-free. So during the next break, we'll open up the lines, and you can take a shot at it. Anyway, here in Georgia, a state representative is sponsoring a bill that will require all presidential candidates to prove their citizenship before getting on the ballot in the state. And his half-witted statement, he said, in view of all the uncertainty and all the disagreement about any proof of citizenship of the current president, I believe that no citizen should ever have any doubts about the citizenship of the highest elected official of the land. I don't think the American people have been given any adequate documentation of the president's citizenship. Oh, my God. You know, you just want to start smashing things until you're exhausted and fall asleep. But he was asked by a TV channel down here if he considers himself a classic birther. You know, birther. How about these terms? A birther. Hatfield said, quote, no, I wouldn't say that at all. I'm simply a citizen who is concerned to make sure that the Constitution is upheld and enforced. And the reporter asked him, so you don't know one way or the other, whether he's a citizen of the United States? And Hatfield replied, well, of course not. I have not been given any sort of proof. Oh, my God. So, anyway, a little blast of magnolia juice from Georgia. Mazatlan Bob writes, subject line is Gun Boys. Mike, coming home from Albuquerque last night, the satellite was coming in portly, so we finished the podcast from Wednesday the 21st. To add to your rip on the Gun Boys, I recall reading Eldridge Cleaver's Soul on Ice back in 1970. He detailed how the Black Panthers decided to start carrying guns openly after checking the California laws back then. Well, when the good, i.e. white, citizens of the Oakland area saw these bad boys carrying rifles, shotguns, and pistols, the local government acted swiftly to legislate that loophole. I think it just goes to show another example of the teabaggers as the racists they are. Keep banging the drum, Bob. And I have something that... I'm going to save that for later. It's too long. Too long indeed. What else we got? Beep, 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 beep. From Landry in Bellingham, Washington. Mike, after the last documentary I saw on the Reverend Jim Jones, I thought to myself, that guy kind of reminds me of Glenn Beck. I remember you referring to Glenn Beck as Suicide Boy and saying that he might kill himself on his own show. At this point, I wouldn't be too surprised if he reenacted a Jim Jones live on TV where all of his dumbass cult followers in the studio audience drink his Kool-Aid and then he shoots himself so he doesn't have to die slowly like all the rest of the people in his studio audience. On your show, you should do a segment where you make every possible comparison between Glenn Beck and Jim Jones. After all, I think America may need this as a wake-up call. Landry. Well, he doesn't have a studio audience. The people that you hear are his heavily sedated crew members, you know, the camera operators and the sound guy and the producer, you know, and they're all high on God knows what kind of drugs. Jim Jones, of course, was a guy down in from the West Coast who took 900 people into eternity in with him in Guyana. Yeah, I can see Glenn Beck definitely is that type. There is no question. And I think Glenn Beck would love to take 900 people with him. It would be an indication of the power of his personality. Wouldn't it? Boo, 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 boo. We got time. No, we don't. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, podcast trivia. So, during this commercial break, Kathy is going to open up the lines. And if you are one of the lucky winners, or the lucky winner, since we only do one on a Friday now, if you are one of the lucky winners, you will receive a one-year commercial-free podcast subscription to The Molloy Show. Downloads absolutely free. Oh, my God. With a total retail value of $59.40 if you were to buy it. How about that? Stick around. We'll be right back. Would I lie to you, honey? No, no, no. Would I say something that wasn't true? I'm asking you, sugar, would I lie to you? My friends, no one says no. I won't be here anymore. Burn my bags, clean the floor. Watch me walking, walking out the door. Believe me, I'll make it, make it. RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. Check out her site. All right, I can't do that voice anymore. You know what you win if you win. All right, let's give it a shot here. Mark is in Louisville, listening on Sirius. Hey, Mark.
Hey, what's up, Mike?
Not too much. You driving?
Yes, sir.
All right, you ready to do this?
Let's rock.
All right. The creators of what popular Comedy Central TV program recently received a thinly veiled death threat from a Muslim extremist group for their disrespect of the Prophet Muhammad? Was it A, Ugly Americans, B, South Park, C, Mad TV, or D, The Daily Show?
That would be South Park.
That would be the right answer. All right. There was a blogger on revolutionmuslim.com. I'm going to put you on hold, Mark, because there's a lot of road noise coming through your phone. But you won. Way to go, pal. A blogger on revolutionmuslim.com warned that South Park co-creators Trey Parker and Matt Stone would end up like Dutch filmmaker Theo van Gogh, who was slain for making a film critical of Islamic society. All right. Mark in Louisville, Kentucky wins. Let's see how easy that was. Ah, isn't that easy? Oh, my God. All right. Now we have some folks on hold. Let's take a couple of calls while we're here. Tom is in Bullhead City, Arizona. Oh, Arizona. Hey, Tom. I hope you're very white.
Like Jonathan Winters and Edgar Winters, that kind of white.
Oh, are you really? Okay.
Yeah. But anyway.
Well, you're safe then.
Not really, because I got an Obama sticker on my truck.
Okay. So okay. You're in trouble too.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm carrying my passport around. I'm kind of worried because the thing is, if you carry, if you don't have a license, right? You know, you're dead, right? And if you do have a passport,
yeah,
you carry you around. Concealed weapons now, because the concealed weapons law they just passed, the same thing. Now you got people who can carry concealed weapons who have identity. Imagine.
Well, you know, and I know, there are going to be some shootings.
Oh, yes.
Here in Georgia, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think it was 2 years ago they passed a law, this crazy Republican legislature. That said, it is a defense to, if you kill somebody, it is a defense to claim that you felt that their language was threatening to you. In other words, if you're driving through traffic and, you know, you cut somebody off and you call him a son of a bitch, he can take out his gun and shoot you. Now, he'll be arrested. He will be arrested. But he can use that as a defense. So things are getting crazier and crazier in Arizona. You have all these people, all these crazy people out there. And don't misunderstand. I know and I fully acknowledge that the situation with a flood of immigrants into Arizona has become a problem. But there are ways to handle this, I'm sure, other than doing what's being done, violating the Constitution. I'm sure it violates Arizona State Constitution. You can't, you know, it's an old line, but you can't beat people up and have them say, I love you. There has to be a way to do this, and I'm sure there are many ways to do this. The first way to do it would be to repeal anything and everything that has to do with NAFTA. I mean, just get rid of it. The North American Free Trade Agreement utterly and absolutely destroyed the ability of Mexicans, among others, but especially Mexicans, to make a living, especially Mexican farmers. It just absolutely destroyed their entire economy. And then when you couple that with an insatiable appetite in this country for drugs, we can't get enough drugs. We love drugs. We want drugs, more drugs, drugs, drugs. So you have the drug wars in Mexico that are now spilling across the border. Tom, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Two situations that you can make a very strong argument for were engineered. Both were engineered by the United States. The drug horror in Mexico and the collapse more or less, of the certainly the agrarian economy in Mexico. And all of a sudden, you have people that are coming to the United States any way they can. I mean, I would like to ask some of these white folks in Arizona, honest to God, if all of a sudden Canada were the superpower in this hemisphere and passed some kind of crazy laws that eliminated all the jobs in the United States, and Arizonans who had a certain skill they could no longer use in Arizona because the job was not there, but they knew that they could perform that job in Winnipeg. So they started the long trek north. I wonder how these white people would feel when the Canadians said to them, show us your papers or we'll lock your ass up or worse and certainly deport you. So you're a white-skinned American and you can't feed your family. Because of laws passed by Canada, your livelihood has disappeared. I don't need to draw that broad of an analogy, but certainly people understand. No, I guess they don't. What happened? You know, this has nothing to do with, you know, people wanting to come to this country from Mexico other than for jobs. I mean, people don't come here looking for citizenship. If they do, there's a way to do that. They don't come here because the scenery's nice. They don't come up here to visit Yellowstone or Disney World. They come here for two things, either to find employment or deliver drugs. And in both instances, it's the United States that has set that up, made that possible. Why is that so hard to understand? Oh, my God. Probably one of the quickest ways to eliminate part of the problem would be to legalize marijuana in this country across the board. All the states just legalize the damn stuff. I mean, what's the big fear about? As far as cocaine, well, we don't have the climate. Oh, maybe we did would up in the Rockies, but we don't have the climate to grow coca. So I guess that's always going to be imported, right? But maybe what we could do is encourage the methamphetamine industry in this country. You talk about some crazy people. No, I'm just kidding. Methamphetamine is the devil. And I'm not religious. Methamphetamine is pure satanic evil. And I don't believe in pure evil. It is that bad. And it's all over the United States. So the people that can't afford cocaine from that comes through Mexico, run by the Mexican drug lords, they will go for the kitchen sink stuff or the stuff that you can now make in the backseat of your car. Ah, how about that? But America, we are a very sick, dying society. We really are. Come on. I don't say that with any glee. That breaks my heart. I wish there was something I could do to think of a cure. But this is a sick, dying, militaristic society. We have been warned for decades that we were approaching this tipping point, and we're here. We're here. The economy is in the crapper.
Oh, well, house prices went up, Mike. House sales went up, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's because we had some socialism to boost house prices, the $6,500 or the $8,000 tax rebate. Pure socialism, right? Yeah, if you get socialistic, we can turn the country around. But predatory capitalism is destroying us. We are dying. We are sick and we are dying. We are drug-addled. Our children are on drugs. Our adults are on drugs, either legal or illegal. It doesn't matter anymore. The problem with our relationship with Mexico, and that's what it is. It doesn't have anything to do with Honduras or Guatemala. It has to do with Mexico. That problem was created in the United States. It continues, the drug situation continues to be created on an hourly, minute-to-minute basis in the United States. And NAFTA, which Bill Clinton, I didn't know this until somebody sent me something. Bill Clinton is now saying that he regrets, I'm paraphrasing here, but he regrets having had anything to do with NAFTA. So, and I think he's saying it because of the realization that it has destroyed lives here, all over this hemisphere. I don't know how it's affected the Canadians, but it has damn sure affected citizens of the U.S. and certainly citizens of Mexico. Just absolutely slammed us up against a brick wall. What a shame. So these two big problems, you know, the answer is not to demand papers from people. The answer is to get real about marijuana, legalize it. And then if you want to tighten down on cocaine, go ahead. And rescind NAFTA. Let Mexicans figure out a way, which they always had in the past, to make a living in their own country. What a novel idea, huh?
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Now, before you send me an email, crack cocaine, I completely understand, is every bit as bad as methamphetamine. The cocaine itself is. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, if you live in the Andes and you chew coca leaves because it increases your heart metabolic rate so you can breathe at those high altitudes, I guess it's pretty cool, but no, there's nothing good that can be said about any kind of speed drug. Remember back in the 60s? Remember the signs that said speed kills? Remember that? Yeah. The pictures you could see every once in a while from autopsies of the organs of a 22-year-old who had been hooked on whatever speed, dextrodrine, dexamil, methadrine, methamphetamines, all that stuff, and coke, although coke was not all that big in the 60s and early 70s. But you would see these pictures, and they were put up specifically to warn you. I worked for about 3 months in a crisis center, a drug crisis center here in Atlanta, way back in 1970. And in 1970 in Atlanta, it was still 1967, actually. But some of the stuff that I saw and dealt with on I was just a helper. I wasn't a medical person. I was just someone to move the bodies around when more space was needed. Living bodies, But the people who came in who were strung out on speed-like drugs were just, it was horrifying. People that came in who were having a bad trip, it's kind of fun. Well, for me, to sit and talk with them. I don't mean to torture them, but just to sit and talk. Hey, where are you now? Really? What color is it? How did I get off on that? Cigarette smoking too is a killer. They don't, you never see any more pictures of lungs that have been. I would be terrified to see the pictures of my lungs, even though I've been off that stuff for 8 years. Oh, my God. Back to your calls. Nora is in Minneapolis listening on KTLK, or not KTLK, on KTNF. Hey, Nora.
Hey, Mike. I saw you at the Blue State Ball.
Yeah, yes, you did. You did see me, yeah.
Don't even get me started about the use of these drugs. People have no sense the way they use them. Heavy drugs are meant for episodic, not addictive use. Like, would you do peyote morning and night every day?
I wouldn't think so. No, no.
Anyway, I wanted to mention, when you were starting to talk at the Blue State Ball,
yeah,
and Big Ed Schultz was leaving the room, and I was saying, I was grabbing his hand and telling him, thanks for putting Mike Malloy, for advertising him on your show. And he said, oh, yeah, that's what it was, advertising. While you were just starting to talk, and you were saying, I'm just stepping out of being in the Psycho Talk booth here.
Dude, yeah.
Remember that?
I do. I do remember that. I do indeed. And I remember you, Nora.
I was just sitting here on my friend's laptop that he brought over for me to look at videos. The video of Keith Ellison, which I missed that night. So that was pretty good.
Yeah. Well, cool.
Someone gave me a free Mac that I can't watch any videos on. It's like a newspaper, kind of. You can only look at pages.
Oh, well.
So, yeah. This laptop, I'm learning PC off of that.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good. Mm-hmm.
But, man, I called in because what you were talking about, the e-cigarette.
There you go.
I got a friend that has a terrible addiction problem, and she's finally, at the age of 37, getting the will to want to quit for the first time. But you know what? I think these e-cigarettes might be a good idea for her. But I saw Willie Nelson on Larry King about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Willie Nelson's recommending that people getting towards elderly that are marijuana users,
uh-huh,
he recommends switching to a vaporizer.
Yeah. Well, any kind of smoke that you take into your lungs is going to have a deleterious effect, you know. Timothy Leary, now I'm not trying to name drop, but I had a nice conversation with him in Boulder, Colorado 25 years ago with a bunch of other people, and he was at the point in his life where he said, no, don't smoke it. Eat it. You know, bake it into brownies, bake it into, or mix it into soups, put it into meatloaf. But for God's sake, don't smoke it. Smoking will kill you. Thanks, Nora. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. No, that's not name dropping. That just, you know, is a thing that happened. And I'm a better human being because it did. Do we have that Timothy Leary's dead? You played that earlier, didn't you? Leviticus 19:33 and 34. And if a stranger sojourn with thee in your land, you shall not vex him. But the stranger that dwelleth with you shall be unto you as one born among you. And thou shalt love him as thyself. For ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God, Arizona. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. I'm going to come to your calls in just a minute. There's an open line here if you want to call in. 877-996-2556. A couple of emails having to do with what we were talking about last night about education and these horrendous budget cuts that are, you know, another piece in this destruction of the United States, utter and absolute. And there's no mercy here. This is just this country dying. We sold houses last month, Mike. Yeah, okay. Jeff in Kenosha, Wisconsin writes, Mike, I just heard you talk about the country school systems. I'm lucky to live in a town where we have excellent school music programs. It's been this way for generations. That even my most ardent conservative friends will defend. The value of music in schools was best explained by a guest conductor at a recent school district orchestra festival. She said, congratulations, parents, your kids have won the lottery. Participating in orchestra is the most complex activity your child will participate in, and it will possibly affect every other aspect of their lives. The answers to the problems children experience in their school life, academic, social, behavioral, are in music education. The answers, end quote. Jeff goes on, we pay high taxes, but most people here agree that it's an investment worth making. The bad news is we've lost a lot of jobs. We have made automobiles here for nearly 100 years. These were union jobs that paid well, but Chrysler will close its plant here in December. LeBlanc, which made saxophones and woodwinds for decades, closed its doors several years ago. These are just two examples of local companies that made a huge contribution to the economic and cultural, economic life and cultural development of our town that we've lost to globalism. Push hasn't come to shove here yet, but it's coming. And I worry that we will lose what we worked so hard to maintain. Jeff in Kenosha. Yeah, that's it's so true. It's just so true. My immigrant grandparents, who my grandfather was functionally illiterate pretty much for most of his life, I was telling Kathy this the other day, but they had some of my earliest memories in their house, and he owned a gas station. He was a gas station tire dealer. Small business, little crappy, junky gas station in Findlay, Ohio, with an annex where he sold or repaired tires for people. And every single night when he came home from work, at least when I was there, I was spending most of my summers there, one of the first things he would do after he washed his hands with lava soap, he would go back into the room of their house they called the parlor and turn on this ancient record player and put on a 78 RPM of Enrico Caruso. And he would listen. That music would, float through the house. My grandmother got to the point where she didn't like it so much because she figured record players were tools of the devil. Anything that didn't immediately glorify Jesus Christ was, my grandmother was a Baptist fundamentalist. She really got crazed about it. But my grandfather insisted. So, my mother and her brothers and sisters, they grew up with some sort of cultural ambiance floating around them. So when it came my mother's turn, she made all of us kids, and yeah, you had to beat us into doing it practically, do musical instruments. Mine, my mother decided, was a violin. And I took violin lessons for probably 7 years and played at one time in the Toledo Youth Orchestra. First violin, C. And first piece I ever played in concert was Finlandia. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Sibelius scared me to death. And if I picked up a violin right now, I could not I couldn't play a scale. But what it did do, all those years of taking violin lessons, it made the rest of my education, and I know this to be true. I didn't know it at the time, but subsequent to all that, I have read about how music instruction, music with an instrument, you know, has to be instrumental. I guess it could be singing also, but musical instruction does something to the little brain. It makes it more amenable to math and algebra and sentence structure and just the whole spectrum of education. And yet, what is one of the first things that is cut in these crazy budget stuff? Music. And then what's the next thing? Art. Although sometimes it's art and then music. My God. We just don't understand, do we? This is from Annie. Mike, I enjoy listening to your show. Tonight's topic on education is something that has me sick at heart. I returned to the U.S. 6 years ago after having lived 30 years overseas, primarily in the Far East. I left a country in the early 70s, the U.S., with a fairly well-educated populace, though not compared to most Europeans, but I returned in 2003 and was just shocked to see the degradation of the average American's education. People cannot even speak or spell properly, and worse than that, don't even care. The closing of schools, the cutting of phys ed in the arts, and the firing of thousands of teachers bodes very ill for the future of America. We shall reap what we've sown, and much of the world's developing countries have already passed us by when it comes to educated and ambitious future generations. We're just too ignorant to realize it. Cannon fodder. That's all we'll be good for. Annie. Yow. And Jeremy in Southern California, quoting Arne Duncan, Obama's Secretary of Education, the quote is, quote, "We are trying to blur the lines between the public and the private," right? We talked about this the other night, end quote. Jeremy writes, "We on the left better get wise to this good cop, bad cop scam between the so-called left and the so-called right. These people are conservative versus ultra-conservative, and yet they aren't even capitalists. The public pays the cost and takes the risk, while they take the profits from what the public develops. Take aerospace, high-tech, internet, computer chips, etc., all developed by the military, paid for with public funds, while they hand the technology over to, quote, private, end quote, companies. It is a way to rob public funds while they accuse U.S. of being socialist. This is what we are, period. Welcome to feudal America." Mm-hmm. You know, I get these emails, and, you know, I get the emails with the misspelled, garbled words and the F word and, you know, we're going to kill you and all this other horse crap. But, and those bother me in the sense that I live in a country that can produce that, those kinds of emails. And yet I get these other kind that really restore my hope in people, in others of my fellow citizens. These are not people who would go along with immigration laws in Arizona like the ones that have been passed, or you got to show us your birth certificate, or any of this other crap. The emails I get from people like the ones I just read to you are from people who get it, who understand, who are probably just as distressed as I am to understand that the United States is dying.
stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Mike, last October I got the opportunity to tour Japan playing music. I can't begin to tell you how far we are behind not only Japan, but so many other countries as far as education is concerned. I was told by my neighbor, who happens to be from the Ukraine, that not many people spoke English in Japan. Funny how I didn't know that, but she was right. The thing is, although not many people speak English, they know enough English to help you if you're in need. How many people here know enough of any language, including English, to help someone from another country if they are in need? But it really dawned on me how far behind we are in terms of education when a band member and I decided to visit Osaka Castle by taking the train. We figured out how to get there, and while riding the train, we asked an elderly woman, were we going the right way, by pointing to Osaka Castle on a map we had. She assured us that we were going the right way. Just then, at a stop, another lady and her 5-year-old daughter with a school uniform on got on the train. The elderly lady asked the woman, were we going the right way, speaking Japanese, of course. The lady then said something to her daughter in Japanese, and her daughter came over to us and spoke perfect childlike English while pointing to our map and saying, this is where you are, right here, and this is where you want to go. You are going the right way, just 2 more stops. Then she and her mother sat next to us. She was carrying what looked like a dollhouse that she may have had made with all of her little animals and dolls inside it. She read us a note she had written. It said, I like you, Will. You be my friend. This is my house. I don't think she wrote it for us, but she was happy to read it. She just talked and talked like any 5-year-old. I almost hated to leave her when our stop came because she was such a little joy. Mike, as my friend and I walked toward Osaka Castle, the education thing hit me like a ton of bricks. You see, Mike, the other band member and I are African American. I had to ask myself, what woman in America would send her 5-year-old daughter to help 2 black guys on a train? I'm sure you know what I mean. First of all, this child was coming from school on a Saturday. What are our children doing on Saturdays? Also, her mother didn't see us as a threat. You see, we didn't feel that kind of pressure in Japan. I'm sure you know what I mean. Mike, this woman saw us not only as a chance to someone to help, but a chance for her daughter to practice her English with 2 Americans. Mike, I really enjoyed Japan, but I came back feeling so dumb. So we can keep shouting, USA, USA, we're number one, we're number one. But Mike, the world isn't listening anymore. They've moved on. Way on. Joseph. Good email, Joseph. Good story. Well, you know what I mean by good. What else? Excuse me. All right, to your calls. Ray is in Great Falls, Montana, listening on XM. Hello, Ray.
How are we doing?
Good.
That's good. You know, I just started listening to your radio program last night.
Uh-huh. Well, good. Thank you.
And what kills me is the hypocrisy that we hear in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about the meltdown, you know, in the banks.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the banks was we never should have given them the welfare.
We shouldn't have what?
Give them the welfare at the end when we bailed them out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Capitalism says you live or die, and if you die, you should be kicked to the curb and stay dead.
And that's where we failed, is that's what happened.
Well, I think the way we failed was back in the 90s when the Republican Congress and the Democratic president conspired to end the Glass-Steagall Act that was passed back in the 30s. The Glass-Steagall Act said that a bank could not, on the one hand, be a place where you could save your money, and on the other hand, be a place that could get involved in investments and speculation, and I'm simplifying it, but that's essentially it. So Phil Gramm, former Republican senator from Texas, who wound up working at UBS in Switzerland, one of the worst predators on earth, Phil Gramm and a couple other people decided to introduce legislation that would end Glass-Steagall, and a lot of Democrats signed on with it, and Bill Clinton signed it, and I think that was in 96 or 97. So that released the floodgates, and if there's anything greedier on earth than a banker or someone with an MBA who's doing nothing to improve the country, but everything to enrich himself or herself, I'd like to know who that person is. And I can't think of anyone. Ray, thanks. Got to leave it there. Hope to hear from you again. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, last one here, and then we're going to back to your calls. This is from Mark in San Diego, I believe. Mike, when I'm not writing political articles, I give piano lessons to make my living. 7 years ago, I saw 68 students per week, taking only Sundays off. Things changed over the years, of course, and now I have 7 students left. Starting Monday, I'll spend the next 2 months working in an office scanning documents, right back where I was when I moved to San Diego in 1998. What you said about studying music when you're young and its positive effects to development is true, and there's no shortage of studies and information out there that proves it. Thanks for talking about this tonight, Mark. Yeah, like I said, when I was a kid, I had no idea about any of this stuff, you know, just like, oh God, violin lesson again. Oh no! I finally, after what, I guess it was just less than 7 years, maybe 6 and a half, I finally talked my mother into letting me take drum lessons. The funny part was we couldn't afford a drum set, so I had a drum pad. You ever seen one of those? Little block of wood with a thick chunk of rubber on it, and you're supposed to do your studies on that. Well, it just wasn't the same. But regardless of the fact that I am functionally illiterate when it comes to music, it was profoundly effective in my education, and I've certainly passed that on to my kids, and Molly's the next one. And yet, when the crunch comes here in the Metro Atlanta area, over in Cobb County, DeKalb County, Fulton County, there are 5 counties that make up the greater part of Metro Atlanta. All of them are going right down the tubes. Where it concerns everything. People continue to reject minimal tax increases to keep schools functioning. So There have been board meetings, school board meetings in both DeKalb County and Cobb County in the past week or so. And parents are understanding now because the school systems here are firing teachers left and right, eliminating extra activities that don't do, deal specifically with passing No Child Up Behind tests nonsense. Physical education, forget about it. Music, forget about it. Art, forget about it. Tutoring, if you're doing poorly in a subject, forget about it. After school activities, doors are locked. Is there anything left? No. And the word here in Georgia is that it'll take years, literally years, to recover. And how did this happen? Well, part of the reason is so many sources of revenue to the state of Georgia were demolished by the banksters on Wall Street, who had great fun destroying everything and making billions in bonuses. In the meantime, or not in the meantime, but even now, you saw the reports, billions and billions of dollars in profit to these companies that not that long ago were declared too big to fail and had to be bailed out, and were bailed out by Bush and Obama. And yet I can travel about 15 minutes from my secret compound and be amongst children who have no idea why all the things they counted on, band and orchestra and sports. A lot of these schools are cutting high school sports, middle school sports. And they don't, you know, the kids don't know why. Well, there's no money. Why is there any money? There was always money. Why is there any money? My mom and dad had money when they went to this high school, because you find a lot of that here in the South. Parents that go to the same schools, or kids that go to the same schools as their parents did. And this is it's an absolute stupefying tragedy. We will spend $800 billion on weapons and destruction and murder and death and mayhem and poison and lies and deceit this year, but school systems all across the country are failing, folding, closing down. Class size going from 22 students per teacher to 40 students per teacher. On and on and on. Do you think there will ever, I'm serious, will there ever come a time, ever, when people in this country wake up to this, that American empire, through the barrel of a gun and great, great weapons technology. Oh, my God. Yes. Look. Look at our fighter bombers. Look at these suckers. Stealth this. And, oh, boy. Zing, bang, boom. Ah. Do you suppose we will ever realize what we are doing to ourselves? Do you think we ever will? Ever? Obama's not going to change anything. His successor won't change anything. The next president after that and after that and after that won't change anything. And why not? Why not? Oh, but boy, we're hell about stopping those brown-skinned illegal immigrants. Ah, show us your papers, you... It's just maddening, maddening. We have people running around this country claiming to be politicians who are Sarah Palin or John Kyle or I don't know. It's just heartbreaking. It is heartbreaking to finally confront the reality that our society, our country, is dying. Our priorities there are no more priorities. The priorities are militarism and money for the elite few, the 0.1% that will, by God, make money no matter how many schools are closed. It doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, they encourage the closing. Son of a bitch! And here we sit. Here we sit. I don't know how to deal with that, you know? I look at these bagger type freaks down here. You know, Cobb County is, all these county schools are going down the toilet. And I think to myself, well, yeah, you know, Mike, not that long ago, you were railing about these schools, Cobb County to be exact. They had stickers that they put inside their science textbooks. Stickers. Approved by the Cobb County Board of Education. And the reason they put these stickers in is because they couldn't get rid of teaching the children creationism. I mean, they weren't allowed to teach creationism. So they put these stickers in that said, this book contains theory of evolution. It is only one of several theories. It is not necessarily true. And every kid who took these particular courses in Cobb County High School were concerned the natural sciences had to confront that sticker. Son of a bitch. I mean, and why? Because we have Christian fundamentalists here and there and over there and up there and down there and over there. I don't care where you live, with a few exceptions. You've got these insane fundamentalist religious people, mostly the ones that destroy everything, are Muslim and Christian. You know it as well as I do. Jesus, God, how much longer are they going to be fighting their Allah and Jehovah nonsense? You know, what are we in? We're ending in the third millennium of this crap. The Christians and the Muslims, fundamentalists. No. We're not going to. We don't. Now, that's a broad blanket statement. I realize there are exceptions to that. I understand that. I understand that there are Muslim scholars and Christian scholars who free themselves from this madness of fundamentalism. But here in Cobb County, Georgia, it was the Christian fundamentalists that managed to get stickers in the books so that the children going to school, trying to study any one of several of the natural sciences, had to push past a sticker that told them what they were reading was not necessarily true, because it challenged the real truth found in the book of Genesis. It's crazy. All right, take a break. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
For any reason we can't devise, we wouldn't know intellectual Pascal by the seat of his pants. Don't like the Northeast, he hates the coast, and he hasn't got a friend in France. Jesus votes Republican, and he saved us from Al Gore. And he believes in trickle down and shipping jobs offshore. He wishes all.
For the hour, haven't done this for a while. Thanks to all the people that helped make this program. Sharon Gordy, who's our military affairs correspondent. Kate Petrini, education. Bruce Enberg, economic affairs. Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, ethics advisors. And Kathy Bay, who's our engineer and executive producer. Daryl is in Santa Fe, listening on 1260 AM. Hey, Daryl.
Hey, Mike. Hey, I love your show, and thank you for taking my call. And who knows, maybe another world is possible. I've wanted to try to throw out something positive with all the bad news out there about education in Arizona. I always wonder, Did you attend any events, or are you familiar with the U.S. Social Forum? It was right in Atlanta in 2007.
No, I met some people who were here to attend it, but
That's fine. It was great. I mean, I was there, and I thought it was great.
Yeah.
12,000 people showed up, and that's with no publicity. And if your viewer, if your listener has never heard of it, that's because it got no ABC, no NBC, not even any CNN, and we were right in Atlanta.
Right.
And just a little background very quickly. A U.S. Social Forum is like the world social forum that came out of the Battle of Seattle, except a lot of people, they don't know they have U.S. social forums, too, that are meeting places for activists, cultural workers. They're great places to meet up. And most of that 12,000 that showed up were people of color. It was great. And I just want to let people know that there will be another U.S. Social Forum this year in Detroit, Michigan, June 22nd through 26th. May I throw out an email address? Not an email, a web address?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, go look it up at ussf2010.org, ussf2010.org. And it's something positive out there, which we don't get too much on your show, but that's because we don't get too much of it in the world.
I hear you.
Okay, Mike. Okay.
That's ussf2010.org.
Right.
Okay. I'll mention it as I can. Thanks, Daryl.
Okay.
All right, man. Appreciate you checking in. Mike is in Salt Lake City, listening on XM. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing, Mike?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
I'm hanging in there. Mike, I want to talk to you about that law in Arizona. And there's something that happened yesterday. I don't know if you heard about it. I heard about this on another talk show. What happened was this police officer confronted a Hispanic American citizen and demanded, you know, his proof of ID. He showed him a commercial truck driver's license plus a social security number. That wasn't good enough for the cop. So the cop put the Hispanic in handcuffs. He had to call his wife. His wife had to come down with his birth certificate as well as her birth certificate to prove, you know, to satisfy that cop.
Right.
The problem with that law in Arizona is this, Mike. I just hate it when one group gets singled out. What we're supposed to be here in America is everybody is to be treated equally and the same. What goes for one goes for all.
Well, I guess that's kind of the idea. But we don't live in a country like that. We really never have. You know, even the people that put the country together, who said we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, and at the same time, black people in this country were finally allowed to be 3/5 of a human being for the purpose of census or for counting, for representation for the white landowners. So, you know, when you have that kind of hypocrisy from the first moment of the founding of a country, that kind of hypocrisy, that country is eventually doomed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. No, they didn't. If they did hold those truths to be self-evident, then they would not have been slave owners. So the whole thing, and they probably wouldn't have, they may have continued with the genocide, but they would not have been slave owners. So, the country was founded in hypocrisy, racism, and genocide. It is no surprise, at least it shouldn't be, that after 230 years, it is crashing and burning. Right?
Yeah. You know, if you read the Declaration of Independence, Mike, there is a passage in there where it refers to the Native American as savages. So you can't tell me that the founding fathers were for equality for all. No, they They did not like Native Americans, and it's right there in the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah. Well, the point, I think, and thanks, Mike, the point, I think, is that there has been one class of people in this country that was entitled to all the good things you can get when you come to a country that is sparsely populated and take it over and exploit the hell out of it. There was one class, one race, and one gender. And over the years, of course, that has changed, or it's been mitigated a bit. It hasn't really changed. It's still pretty much that way. One class, one race, one gender continues to harvest, you know, all the goodies that are created or used to be created. I don't know. I just I have problems with all that. Don't you? Of course you do. I'll see you Monday. Take care and keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin, Kenny, wherever you are.
Search the internet.